Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're digging into a really fascinating origin story from the Korean Peninsula, the Gimhae-Kim clan.
That's right. A huge lineage.
Yeah, exactly. And for you listening, if you like getting up to speed on interesting stuff quickly but thoroughly, this should be perfect. It's a big slice of Korean history and culture.
We're using info mainly from kimhaekim.net, plus some background from Wikipedia on the clan and the old Gaia Kingdom.
Right. And our mission really is just to unpack this legendary beginning, understand where it comes from, and, you know, see its lasting impact.
Let's do it.
All right. So where do we start? What's the setting for this?
Okay. So picture the Korean Peninsula, south central part, first century CE. This area was known as the Gaia Kingdom.
Okay.
Geographically, yeah. it's pretty much where the Gimhae area is today in South Korea. And just for context, this is happening around the same time the other big Korean kingdoms, Goguryeo, Baekje, Silla, were also getting started.
So a time of formation, really. What was going on in Gaia specifically at the very beginning?
Well, initially, it wasn't one unified kingdom. You had nine elders, kind of like tribe chiefs, governing their own groups.
Nine different leaders.
Yeah, ruling their own patches. So no central king figure yet. It highlights that sort of transition phase where maybe they were starting to think about needing more centralized leadership.
Okay, nine chiefs. Sounds like it could get complicated. What pushed them towards wanting a single king?
Well, the story goes, this is from the Samguk Yusa, an old Korean chronicle, that these nine elders felt they needed a king for, you know, stability, direction.
Makes sense.
So in 42 AD, they all gathered at this place called Kujibom.
Kujibom.
Yeah, it means something like turtle-shaped hill. Kind of poetic. They went there to pray together for a king to be sent to them.
Praying on a turtle hill for a king.
Right.
Did it work?
Apparently so. The chronicle says a voice came down from the heavens.
A voice from heaven.
Yep. And it told the elders and all the people with them to go up Kujibon, dig up some earth there, and then sing a special song while dancing. The song's called the Kuji Song.
Digging, dancing, and singing on command from a heavenly voice. Quite the ritual. What happened when they did all that?
As they were doing it, this plum-colored, actually, the source I looked at said purple. A purple rope came down from the sky.
Okay.
And hanging from the end of this rope, a golden chest.
A golden chest. Not just like gold coins.
Nope. A whole chest made of gold.
Wow. Okay. So what was inside?
Inside the chest, they found six golden eggs.
Six golden eggs.
That's right. Gold, you know, usually means royalty, purity, maybe.
Yeah.
And eggs suggest birth potential. Six of them.
Definitely symbolic. What did they do with them?
The elders took the chest and the eggs back home. Very carefully, you'd imagine.
I bet. So the big reveal, the next day.
The next day.
Boom.
The eggs hatched.
Yeah,
not birds, not reptiles. Six baby boys.
Whoa. Six human babies from golden eggs.
Exactly. Pretty miraculous, right? Sort of underlines the whole divine origin thing.
No kidding. Okay, six boys was one, like, the main one.
Yes. The first one born, he's named Kim Suro.
Kim Suro.
And the name is significant, too. Suro means came out first, basically. And Kim, well, that means gold in Korean and also in Chinese characters.
So gold who came out first, very direct.
Pretty much.
And this Kim Suro, he's the founder we're talking about.
That's him. He became the founder and the first king of Gyeongguan Gaia.
Gyeongguan Gaia.
Right, which became the sort of lead kingdom in the Gaia Confederacy. And interestingly, the story says the other five boys also grew up to be kings.
All six became kings.
Yeah, kings of the other five Gaia states nearby.
Yeah.
So this shared, like, divine start for all the local rulers.
Let's pause on the egg thing for a second. It's pretty unusual. What's the thinking behind that symbolism, birth from an egg?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The source materials hinted a few things.
Yeah.
It could mean, like, a spiritual birth, a totally pure beginning, maybe direct divine creation.
Like a fresh start.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Some even draw parallels, maybe a stretch, but parallels to ideas like spiritual rebirth in, say, Christian baptism or Buddhist enlightenment.
Mm.
And the fact they basically became kings the moment they were born, it just shouts special status, divinely chosen rulers. These myths often serve to, you know, legitimize power.
Okay, so King Suro is on the throne, born from a golden egg, amazing start, but a king needs a queen, right?
Right, and that happened pretty quickly. In 48 CE, just 6 years after he emerged from the egg, supposedly.
Wow, okay. Who did he marry?
He married a princess named Hawk Wong Okay. And her story is pretty incredible, too. She supposedly came from a land called Ayuta.
Ayuta? Where's that?
Many historians think it corresponds to Ayutthaya in modern-day India.
India? All the way to Korea in the first century.
It's an amazing distance for that time, yeah. really makes you think about ancient connections.
Absolutely. And what was she like, this queen?
The records paint her as really beloved by the people. And get this, she's said to have lived to be 156 years old.
156? Seriously?
Like, yeah, that's the legend. Adds to her mystique, doesn't it? These accounts often blend history and, well, myth.
Definitely. So King Ciro and Queen, huh, they start the dynasty. Did they have children?
They did. A big family, actually. 10 sons and 2 daughters.
12 kids.
Yeah. And this is where things get really interesting for clan history. 2 of the sons, the second and third, took their mother's surname. Huh.
Ah, so that's where the Heo clan comes in. Or, huh.
Exactly. The Gimhae Heo, or, huh, clan. The other kids, 8 sons and 2 daughters, they took their father's name, Kim.
Got it. So that explains the connection, the shared ancestry between Gimhae Kims and Gimhae Heos today.
Precisely. They trace back to the same parents, King Suro and Queen.
Huh. Okay, so Gaia Kingdom, founded by Suro, continues for quite a while. What happens eventually? How does it become part of, you know, wider Korea?
Right. Fast forward several centuries to 532 AD. The last king of Gaia, King Kuchung, he's facing a tough situation. The Silla Kingdom is getting really powerful.
Yeah, Silla was on the rise.
Exactly. So King Kuchung made a difficult choice. To avoid a devastating war, he decided to peacefully hand over his territory to Silla.
He just ceded the kingdom. Yeah. Peacefully.
Yeah, which is pretty rare, historically speaking.
How did that work out for the Gaia royal family? Were they just, like, kicked out?
No, actually, the transition seems to have been managed pretty smoothly, relatively speaking. King Kuchung and his family were allowed to stay in their traditional lands.
Okay.
And importantly, his sons, their names were Sejong, Muduk, and Muryuk. They were actually given positions in the Silla government, in the royal court.
So they were integrated into the Silla system.
Kind of, yeah. It meant the Gaia royal line didn't just disappear. It continued to have some influence within Silla.
And one of those sons, or rather his descendants, becomes super important, right? I'm thinking of General Kim Yushin.
Exactly, you got it. General Kim Yushin was the grandson of that last Gaia king, Kuchung.
Right.
His father was Muryuk, one of those sons who joined the Silla court, and Muryuk had also married into the Silla royal family, strengthening those ties.
So Kim Yushin had roots in both Gaia and Silla royalty.
Precisely. And he becomes this absolutely pivotal figure.
Huge figure in Korean history. Tell us about his role.
Well, General Kim Yushin is basically celebrated as one of the main architects of Korean unification.
Unifying the three kingdoms.
Yes, unifying Silla, Goguryeo, and Bakche into what's called unified Silla. A massive turning point.
Wow.
And through his military leadership and, you know, political influence, the Gimhae Kim clan, descended from Gaia royalty, really came back into prominence within this new unified Korea.
So from being peacefully absorbed, they rise again through this unification hero. What an incredible story arc.
It really is. From golden eggs to unifying the peninsula.
And this legacy, it's not just ancient history, right? It's still very relevant today.
Hugely relevant. Mm-hmm. It's estimated that something like 6 million Koreans living today trace their ancestry back to King Suro and Queen clan.
6 million?
Yeah, primarily through the Gimhae Kim clan, the Gimhae Heo clan, and also some branches of the Lee or Yi clan.
How did the Lee clan get connected?
That happened over the centuries through intermarriage and sometimes adoptions between the families.
Fascinating. Such deep roots affecting so many people today. I heard there are even some, like, traditions about marriage between these clans.
Yes, that's a well-known tradition.
Yeah.
Historically, and even sometimes today, people from the Gimhae Kim, Gimhae Heo, and those related Lee branches would traditionally avoid marrying each other.
Why is that?
It comes down to their shared ancestry in this concept of Mongwan.
Mongwan, yeah.
Yeah, it refers to your clan's sort of geobiological origin place, in this case, Gimhae. But it's more than just geography. It signifies that deep shared ancestral line. So marrying within that group was seen as, well, marrying within the extended family traditionally.
I see. A kind of clan-based exogamy based on shared origin.
You could put it that way, yeah.
And just in terms of numbers, the Gimhae Kim clan is enormous today, right?
Oh, yeah. It's currently the largest single clan group among those descended from Suro and, The Gimhae Heo clan, remember, came from those 2 sons who took their mother's name. Still significant, but smaller than the Gimhae Kim branch.
For people who are part of these clans or just interested in tracing lineage, how do they even keep track of this going back so far?
That's where Jokbo come in.
Jokbo?
Yeah, they're Korean genealogy records, often incredibly detailed, tracing family lines back through generations, sometimes centuries, They're really vital cultural documents for maintaining clan history and identity.
Wow. Preserving records like that must be a huge undertaking.
Absolutely. And that website we mentioned earlier, kimhaikim.net, it actually talks about having audio files related to the Jokpo. So trying to preserve and share that heritage using modern tech, too.
So the website acts as a kind of modern hub for the clan.
Exactly. A place for members to connect, share family info, and keep that sense of shared history alive in the, you know, digital age.
Okay, so let's wrap this up. We've gone from ancient Gaia, this amazing story of King Suzero coming from a golden egg.
Mm-hmm. The marriage to princess, huh? From potentially India.
Right. And then tracing their kids, the split into Kim and Halo clans, the end of Gaia, but then the rise of General Kim Yushin.
Who helps unify Korea, bringing the Gimhae Kim lineage back to prominence.
And that legacy continues today with millions of descendants, these unique clan traditions like Bongwan and marriage rules, and the importance of Jokpo records.
It covers a huge sweep of history.
It really does. And maybe a final thought to leave you, the listener, with. Think about the power of these kinds of origin stories.
Yeah, these foundational myths. How much do stories like the golden eggs, passed down forever, still shape how people see themselves, their community, their place in the world?
It makes you wonder about similar stories in, you know, your own background or other cultures you know, and how much weight they still carry today.
Definitely food for thought.